Chapter 40. Balthazar's valet made his way along the dark paneled corridor and stopped at a thick oak door. Balancing a tray on one hand, he knocked softly. No one answered. His lips parted in a faint smile. He knew Karina was in the room because he had carried her unconscious body there from the helicopter less than an hour earlier. The valet dug a key out of his pocket, unlocked the door, and pushed it open. Karina was standing across the threshold, her face contorted in a mask of fury. She clutched the heavy brass base of a shadeless table lamp in two hands as if it was a war club. She had been prepared to crown the first person she saw. She hadn't expected someone holding a fine china teapot and a cup on a tray. Without lowering the lamp, she demanded, "Who undressed me?" The valet said, "A female member of the house staff. Your clothes were being washed. Mr. Balthazar felt you would be more comfortable wearing something clean in the meantime. You can tell Mr. Balthazar that I want my clothes back right away." "You can tell him yourself," the valet said. "He's waiting for you in the garden." "No hurry," he says. "Come when you feel up to it. May I set this tray down?" Karina glared at the man, but she stepped aside and let him into the bedroom. He put the tray down on an end table. Keeping his eye on the lamp, he backed out of the room, leaving the door open. Karina had awakened minutes before to find herself in a strange bed. She remembered the sweet smell in the back of the taxi. She had thrown the covers off and discovered she was clad only in her underwear. She searched around the luxurious bedroom for her clothes. All she found, hanging in a closet, was a long white cotton shift with a scooped neck. Holding the shift in her hand, she had glanced around. Except for the bars on the windows, the chamber was like a bedroom in a fine hotel. She went over to a window and was looking out at a manicured lawn when she heard the knock. She had thrown the shift on and grabbed the lamp. After the valet left, she stepped out into the corridor and watched him disappear down another corridor. She went back into the bedroom and slammed the door behind her. Her hands were trembling with tension. She set the lamp down, settled into a plush chair, and began to cry. The inner anger that had given her the courage to prepare for an assault on the valet had ebbed. She wiped her eyes and went into the bathroom, where she washed her face and combed her disheveled hair. She took a deep gulp of tea, stepped out into the corridor, and followed in the valet's footsteps to a set of open patio doors. She stepped out into brilliant sunshine and looked around. She was in a courtyard garden. Water bubbled in a fountain whose centerpiece was a nude woman surrounded by naked cherubs. But her eyes went to Balthazar, who was clipping flowers from one of the beds that ringed the fountain. Balthazar was dressed casually in white slacks and a black short-sleeve shirt. He wore espadrilles, rope sandals on his feet. He smiled as she entered the courtyard and stepped over to offer her the bouquet of flowers. Karina folded her arms. "I don't want your flowers. Where am I?" He lowered the bouquet and set it down on a marble bench. "You are my guest, Ms. Makati."
"I don't want to be your guest. I insist that you release me."
Still smiling, Balthazar gazed at Karina as if he were a butterfly collector who had captured a rare specimen. "Imperious. Commanding. Much as I would expect from the Makata line." The answer confused Karina. Her anger gave way to confusion.
"What are you talking about?"
"I'll offer a proposition." He gestured toward a round marble table with service settings for two. "Join me for a drink and tapas, and I will tell you the story." Karina glanced around the garden. A couple of men dressed in black uniforms stood near a door that might have led out of the courtyard. Escape was impossible. Even if she made it out of this place, then what? She had no idea where she was. It would be better to bide her time. She walked over and sat at the table with her back rigid. The valet magically appeared with a pitcher and filled their water glasses. Several dishes followed. Karina planned to pick at them rather than accept Baltazar's hospitality, but she discovered that she was famished. She ate what was in front of her, rationalizing that she would need her strength. She didn't touch the rose wine. She wanted to have a clear head to deal with what might lie ahead. Baltazar seemed to be reading her thoughts. He was a shrewd judge of character and made no conversation during the meal other than to ask if the food was to her liking. When she had enough, she drained her water glass and pushed her dish away. "I have fulfilled my part of the proposition," she said. "So you have." Baltazar nodded. "Now I will fulfill mine. The story begins 3,000 years ago with Solomon."
"King Solomon?"
"The one and only. The son of David, king of the lands that include what we now know as Israel. According to biblical references, Solomon receives a visit from the queen of a place called Sheba. She has heard of Solomon's wisdom and is curious. When she arrives, she is impressed not only with his wisdom, but by his wealth. They become smitten with each other. He even writes a series of erotic poems that some believe were to her, at least in part."
"Song of Songs," Karina said.
"That's right. The woman in the poems introduces herself, 'I am black but beautiful, daughters of Jerusalem.'"
"She came from Africa," Karina said.
"That seems to be the case. Her mention in the Bible is a brief one. The Quran expands on the story, and the Arab and later medieval chroniclers picked up the thread. Sheba and Solomon are married. She bears him a son and then returns to her homeland. He has many wives, concubines, and children. She becomes even more powerful and wealthy."
"And the son?"
"The legend says he returns to Africa and reigns as a king."
"A lovely fairy tale," Karina said. "Now, may I be allowed to dispense with your hospitality and leave this place?"
"But that's only the first part of the story," Baltazar said. "The liaison between Solomon and Sheba's handmaiden also produces a son. He dies at an early age, but his progeny live on. They move to Cyprus, where they establish a shipbuilding business and make contact with the Fourth Crusaders. They move to Western Europe after the sack of Constantinople. Unfortunately, I am the last remaining male descendant of the Baltazars. When I die, the family dies with me."
"And none too soon," Karina thought.
She let out an unladylike laugh.
"Are you saying that you are descended from Solomon?"
"Yes, Miss Makati. And so are you."
"You are far more insane than I have imagined, Baltazar."
"Before you pronounce judgments on my sanity, hear me out. The son of Solomon and Sheba became king of Ethiopia. His family ruled for centuries."
"I was born in Italy, but my mother told me the story of King Menelik of Ethiopia. What of it?"
"Then you know about the Kebra Nagash. The holy document tells the story of Sheba and Menelik." Karina was on less sure ground.
"I've heard the name, but I have never read it. I was raised Roman Catholic.
The Kebra Nagash was supposedly found in the 3rd century AD in the Santa Sophia Library of Constantinople. It may have been written later, but that doesn't matter. If you had read it, you would know that the book tells the story of Solomon and Mekada, queen of Sheba. I submitted Mekadi to an expert in onomastics, the study of names. He says your name is derived from Mekada.
That proves nothing. That would mean every boy named Jesus or Christian can claim ties to the Messiah.
I would agree with you, except for one thing. The cup you drank from when you had the Navigator on display contained traces of your DNA. I had the samples analyzed by 3 different laboratories, so there would be no doubt. The results were the same in all instances. Your DNA and mine both contained the same DNA. I believe it goes back to Solomon. You through Sheba, I through her handmaiden. I'll have the lab results sent to your room and you can see them for yourself.
Laboratory reports can be forged.
That's true. But these were not. He smiled again. So don't consider this an incarceration. It is more of a family reunion. We dine early here. Dinner is at 6. As Balthazar walked away, Karina called out, "Wait!" Balthazar was unused to commands. He turned and a flicker of anger flashed across his face.
"Yes, Ms. Mekadi."
She plucked at her gown. If Balthazar thought she was descended from a queen, she would act like one.
"This is not to my liking. I want my own clothes back."
He nodded. "I'll have them sent to your room." Then he walked away and disappeared through one of the doorways into the house. Karina stood in stunned silence, unsure of what to do. The valet came out, and as he cleared the dishes, he said, "Mr. Balthazar says you are free to return to your rooms." The reminder that she was a prisoner shocked her out of her trance. She spun on her heel and strode through the door, down the corridor, and into her room. What had been a prison a short while earlier now seemed a safe haven. She shut the door and leaned against it, shutting her eyes tight as if by doing so she could transport herself to another place. There was no way she shared the same blood with that repellent snake of a man. His mere presence revolted and frightened her. But even more frightening was the possibility that his story was true.